Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to make a statement and then ask the staff a couple of questions. The engagement quality review standard that the board is considering today will fulfill an important part of the board's statutory mandate. Congress expressly directed the board to include in its standards a requirement for a qualified person to perform a concurring or second partner review of every audit report to be filed with the SEC. For the past 5 years, we've been relying on concurring partner requirements that were developed during the era of self-regulation before the board's creation. However, those requirements are not applicable to all firms that prepare audit reports filed with the commission, since only firms that were in existence in 2003 and were members of the AICPA's SEC practice section need to comply with them. Today's proposal begins the process of bringing the board's concurring review standards in line with Congress's directive. More importantly, the proposed standard would focus renewed attention on what is probably the most common quality control deficiency cited in PCAOB inspection reports. Time and again, the board staff identifies audit deficiencies that a properly performed concurring partner review should have detected and caused to be corrected before the audit report was issued. Based on 4 years of inspections experience, it seems clear that engagement quality reviews have a real potential to reduce the number of after-the-fact audit failure discoveries. Unlike PCAOB inspections, and unlike the internal inspections that the major firms perform, the purpose of these reviews is to backstop the engagement team and to identify problems before the audit report is publicly released, while they can still be addressed. That obviously protects investors in a way that no after-the-fact review or inspection can. While it's intended to strengthen concurring reviews, the proposed standard is not an exercise in reinventing the wheel. It builds on, rather than discards, the existing requirements. In my view, the proposal would make 4 key changes. First, the proposal calls more explicitly than the current standard for a risk-based approach. The reviewer would be required to assess whether there are engagement areas that pose higher risks, and to evaluate whether the engagement team performed procedures responsive to those risks. Second, consistent with Congress's direction, the proposed standard would require the reviewer to approve the issuance of the audit report. The interim standards simply require completion of a review, not explicit reviewer approval. Third, under the proposal, the reviewer cannot approve issuance of the audit report if he or she knows or should know that the report is inappropriate. At present, the reviewer determines that nothing has come to his or her attention suggesting that the audit was improperly performed. Fourth, the documentation requirements applicable to the concurring review would become more detailed. Currently, the work papers need only contain evidence that the firm's policies and procedures with respect to the concurring review requirements were complied with. Despite these changes, it bears repeating that for most registered firms, concurring reviews would not be new. The proposal should not have a radical effect on the basic nature of these reviews or on the cost of public company auditing. Many registered firms, including the largest, already have sophisticated review programs. I assume that these firms would not have to make fundamental changes in the design of their programs if the proposed standard is adopted. The accuracy of that assumption, however, is something that I hope will be fully explored as part of the comment process. Finally, it's also important that before the proposal is finalized, the board fully understands how the new standard will affect smaller audit firms, especially those where the reviewer is more likely to be outside the firm rather than a colleague. The potential benefits of a strengthened engagement quality standard are substantial for these firms. We need to make sure, however, that the standard is workable for firms of all sizes and practice types, and that will not have unintended effects on smaller firm practice. To help us understand these issues, I hope the board will receive a wide range of robust and candid public comments. I would like to ask staff a couple of questions to bring out some things that may not be obvious about the proposal. But before I do that, I do want to join in thanking all the people that have worked on this. It's been kind of a long-running project. So Tom Ray, Greg Skates, and Keisha Campbell are currently the front line of the effort, so I'll thank them by name. But as already it's been noted, there are a number of people in general counsel, inspections, and ORA particularly, that have contributed to this, and I thank them all for their effort. I guess I just said, I think the chairman said something similar, that the large firms obviously already have sophisticated and active concurrent partner review programs. I wonder what your sense is of how or whether the proposal would require those firms to change the design of their programs. Is this simply a codification of what at least the major firms are currently doing, or will it require some sort of change in their approach to concurrent partner review?
Let me provide some thoughts on that question. Yeah, I think as a number of us have already said, we're really building to a large degree on requirements for concurring partner engagement quality control review that were developed by the profession. Plus, as I think you fairly outlined, there's a number of areas where we have added to it or brought various things out more explicitly. For example, I believe we have a more explicit requirement for the engagement quality reviewer to make an assessment, if you will, as to whether there are higher areas within the engagement that pose a higher risk that the engagement team either didn't obtain sufficient evidence or maybe had formed an inappropriate conclusion, and of course we would have then asked the engagement quality reviewer to look at those areas. Now, while we bring in a more explicit requirement for the engagement quality reviewer to perform that assessment, I believe the firms do already incorporate a risk-based element in their existing, at least speaking of the large firms anyway, as to which I'm a little bit more familiar with, do bring in a risk-based assessment into their concurring partner review process. So, having said that, of course, I am interested as well in how the firms are going to react to our specific requirement in terms of whether they think this is going to be a substantial change.
Well, I guess just as a corollary to that question, and I suppose ultimately everything has to be paid for, do you have a sense of what effect this proposal would have on the cost of, let's say, large company, large firm, public company auditing?
Again, sort of really based on the, you know, my understanding of the policies and practices of the larger firms, which I do believe recognize risk in their process, it is possible that the effort and cost associated with our proposed standard won't be significantly different than the costs that are currently being incurred in the engagement quality review.
Yeah, well, as I said before, I do hope this is something that we hear about in the comments, I imagine we will. Let me switch to a different topic. I think you said, Greg, that one of the things that the staff had done in designing this proposal was to look at the IAASB's similar quality review standards, and that this proposal was, you said, similar, substantially similar to what the IAASB has. In what ways is it different? And how would you describe the major differences between what we're doing in the international standards?
One of the principal ways it's different from our proposal compared to the IAASB standards is that the conclusion that the review partner or person comes to at the end, after they complete their work, and the conclusion they draw under the IAASB standards, as well as under our current interim standard or requirement, that the reviewer is required to conclude that no matters have come to their attention that would cause the reviewer to believe that the engagement was not performed in accordance with the standards of the PCLB. That's again, under the current requirement and under the IAASB standards today. In quite contrast, though, the proposal before us today provides that the engagement quality reviewer must not provide concurring approval of issuance if four things that I mentioned in my remarks. One, the engagement team failed to obtain sufficient competent evidence in accordance with the standards of CCLB, and two, the engagement team reached an inappropriate overall conclusion on the engagement, and then three, the firm's report is not appropriate in the circumstances, and four, if the firm is not independent of its client. To me, that is the principal difference under our proposal as compared to the IAASB standards and as compared to our current requirement.
I think it's worthwhile also maybe just to reiterate the more explicit requirement for the engagement quality reviewer to perform a risk assessment. The way the standard is laid out, it provides a direction on certain specific procedures that should be performed in connection with each engagement quality review. And then based on having performed those procedures and the information that the engagement quality reviewer obtains as a result of performing those procedures, in addition to other knowledge that the engagement quality reviewer may have, for example, knowledge about the particular industry that was subject to the audit, the engagement quality reviewer makes this risk assessment and then evaluates whether there are other areas or other procedures that should be performed in connection with the engagement quality review. This type of a risk assessment is not as explicitly drawn out in the standards of the IAASB.
I guess I'm not sure this is quite what you're saying, but I guess one would hope that the process wouldn't have to be substantially different, whether someone was complying with our standards or with the international standards, although I appreciate your point that the conclusions would have to be phrased differently. The conclusions that underlie the review would be somewhat different.
I think that's fair. I mean, one of the fundamental aspects here, of course, and I think it might have been said, the engagement quality reviewer is not asked to perform auditing procedures or evidence gathering procedures or a re-audit. The engagement quality reviewer's process is to look at the work and the judgments that have already been performed. So fundamentally, the process should be very similar. Pursuant to our standard or the international standard.
Okay, well, again, that's probably something we'll hear about in the comments, at least I hope it is. Let me turn to the topic of what engagements are covered, and again, you've commented on that. I think, I didn't write it down, Greg, but I think we're talking about integrated audits, financial statement-only audits performed pursuant to our standards, review of unaudited quarterly statements, and these Regulation AB attestation reports, which I'm not sure that most of us were too familiar with before this proposal came along. Oh, and I suppose also a report on remediation of internal controls under auditing standard number 4, if anybody ever were to have such an engagement. Is there anything else currently that this requirement would be subject to?
I'm trying to think off the top of my head if there's other ones specifically. In connection with audits of issuers, those are the primary reports that you mentioned. There could be some others that the engagement team may be requested by the client to perform. They may be asked to perform special reports in connection with their principal lender or others. And those special type reports then would also be subject to the similar review.
And do I understand correctly that in this regard, we're going beyond what Sarbanes-Oxley requires, but if we simply implemented the statute, it would only be the financial statement audits, either integrated or financial statement only?
Yes, we are going beyond that, but we think this is an expectation of the public, that the public would expect this of any auditor to perform this type of function in order to provide the opinion or any type of opinion on the financial statements or in connection with a review.
Okay, there's also a statement in the standard that when the reissuance of the engagement report requires the auditor to update his or her procedures, there has to be an engagement quality review. What does that mean? What would that cover?
Well, there are various circumstances in which the firm would reissue an opinion on financial statements. I think a common one is in connection with a 1933 Act filing, where financial statements are incorporated into a registration statement. The auditor is required to perform certain subsequent events procedures up to the effective date of the registration statement, and then provide a consent that his or her report may be used in connection with that registration statement.
Okay, a consent statement.
Yeah, consent, yeah.
And for example, if there's a change of auditors, we would need a consent from the prior auditors to include financial statements, or their opinion on last year's financial statements or 2 years ago financial statements in the current filing.
That's correct.
We hear a lot from issuers from time to time about the difficulties of getting those consents from prior auditors when there's been a change in an auditor. Now there's going to have to be, in effect, going to have to be both a consent from the prior auditor and from the prior auditor's engagement quality reviewer. Does the reviewer have to be the same person as it was originally, or could you hire a different engagement quality reviewer? How is this going to affect that consent process, again, particularly in the change of auditor situation?
Well, there's a number of questions in there. Essentially, the way I would look at it is I wouldn't look at this as being another step in addition to a firm having to provide the consent. Essentially, the way the standard is structured is it's the engagement team's responsibility to make sure that an engagement quality review has been performed and that they obtain concurring approval of issuance. So from an external perspective, it really should still be one point of contact, the people responsible for the particular engagement, rather than having sort of a separate, discussion between the partner who originally signed the opinion and the engagement quality reviewer. So I wouldn't expect that this standard would create, sort of add any additional burden in that regard. I think another relevant point here related to predecessor auditors is that the subsequent events procedures that a predecessor auditor is required to perform pursuant to the standards in the PCAOB are substantially more limited than the procedures that a continuing auditor would be required to perform. And in fact, a predecessor auditor to a fairly large degree can rely on certain representations provided by the successor auditor in performing those subsequent events procedures. So the review that therefore would be required by the engagement quality reviewer is going to be on a more limited amount of work that predecessor auditor would have to perform. And I think I might have forgot one aspect of your question, which was, does it have to be the same person? The standard doesn't explicitly require that it be the same person who has to perform that work. I think we need to recognize that there are going to be people who retire or people who are required to rotate off for independence reasons and that sort of thing. So we're going to see different people involved in performing these engagement quality reviews over time.
Let me ask you another question along those lines. I mean, particularly in the small firm world, the standard does envision that the reviewer might not be associated with the firm that's issuing, or it might not be, how should I say, regularly associated with the firm that's issuing the audit report. You could hire someone from another registered firm, for example, to be the reviewer. And if I understand correctly, the reviewer has to be independent of the audit client, as independence is defined in the SEC's rules, just as the engagement partner, for example, or the engagement team does. If the reviewer is from a different firm, does the firm have to be independent, or just the reviewer himself? And I guess one thing I'm thinking of, for example, could the firm be performing some sort of non-audit service for the audit client that wouldn't be permissible for the auditor if the reviewer himself isn't involved in those services?
Well, we just so happened to be talking about that question with our general counsel earlier, and I think maybe Corden might be able to.
Let me try to answer that if I can. And I should begin by saying, of course, that most independence rules, including the restrictions on non-audit services from Title II of the Act, are implemented through SEC rules. And I don't want to speak for the SEC, of course, and in addition to parsing through the specific rules, there's always a general standard of independence that applies. But all that said, my understanding of the SEC rules is, as you said, that the EQR reviewer, him or herself, would be considered part of the audit engagement team and therefore become subject to the specific SEC independence rules. But as a general matter, the firm employing that EQR reviewer would not necessarily become subject to those same rules and therefore have to comply with the same independence requirements as the firm issuing the report. Of course, the CCB itself has some independence rules, the tax services rules, and those apply to registered firms and their affiliates, and so those rules as well would not necessarily require that firm employing the EQR reviewer to do the same things the firm issuing the report would have to do to be independent.
Okay, well, that's, I guess, assuming that's the correct interpretation, as you say, there's the SEC's rules, I guess that would give smaller firms somewhat more flexibility in selecting a reviewer. People might have, I guess, views, pros and cons on the underlying policy issue. Let me finish where I started, and I think I asked you at the beginning about impact on large firm quality review procedures. Do you have a sense of what the impact of this proposal is going to be on smaller firms, maybe particularly ones that aren't currently subject to a concurring partner review, and how the cost of small company audits might be affected by this proposal?
A couple thoughts on that. I think the first is that I think historically, based on experience, the engagement quality review is a relatively small aspect of the cost of an engagement. As I said earlier, they are not re-auditing. They are not performing evidence-gathering procedures. The process is one to review and evaluate the judgments of the engagement team and focus on those areas where there's more risk. And again, review the work rather than actually perform additional evidence-gathering procedures. So overall, the EQR component in an audit should be relatively small. We certainly do recognize, however, that particularly for firms that are not performing an engagement quality review, this is going to be an added cost and an added burden for them. But of course, the Act does specifically direct that the requirement be applicable to the issuance of all audit reports for issuers.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I really appreciate this. The time and the views, and I guess as I said before, I think this is particularly a subject where we have a lot to learn from the public comments.
Charlie? It is true that the proposal before us today is an important step to fulfill one of the express requirements of Sarbanes-Oxley. But even more importantly, it's a significant step in strengthening audit quality for the protection of investors. To my mind, the Act singled out engagement quality reviews as an area for improvement because such reviews provide firms with a mechanism to find and correct audit problems before the audit is complete. That's good for both the audit firms and investors. I think the proposal before us today does a good job setting forth procedures that, done thoughtfully, would enable the firm to identify and address audit deficiencies. The proposal does not require the reviewer to re-audit the engagement team's work, but it does draw on the reviewer's own insights as a person vested in the quality of the audit, but also distanced from the front lines. That's an important improvement over the existing standards. Anyone who follows PCAOB inspection reports knows that over the past 5 years, we have found numerous audit deficiencies. In my mind, that's good, because it leads to corrections of past problems when necessary and minimizes the chances of similar deficiencies in the future. Of course, a thoughtful engagement quality reviewer, who after all has access to the same information that we do as part of our inspection, could find and focus the firm on these deficiencies before the firm has actually been inspected. That would be even better for investors because it would lead to these deficiencies being corrected before investors relied on the audit. I'm therefore very pleased that we're able to propose this standard today. Like any proposal, though, public comment will be important to helping us finalize the standards. In this regard, there are two points I would like to highlight for potential commenters. first, in our release, we asked whether we should set forth an overall objective for the quality, engagement quality review. To my mind, the answer is yes. But it's important that we think carefully about how to articulate that objective so as to achieve the intended result and not unintended result. If I were to articulate that objective today, I would say that it is for an audit firm through an engagement quality review to identify audit deficiencies and address them before concluding the audit. But I am very interested to see what commenters have to say on the subject. Second, I hope commenters will focus on the documentation component of this proposal. As our release points out, our overall documentation standard, auditing standard number 3, would not apply to the reviewer's work. Instead, the proposal includes standalone documentation requirements. What I'm interested in knowing from commenters is whether any additional concepts in auditing standard number 3 should be expressly incorporated in the proposed standard. In particular, auditing standard number 3 includes a provision on how firms can demonstrate that they perform required procedures even if they fail to adequately document them. To my mind, the documentation process described in auditing standard number 3 applies equally to engagement quality reviews. In a similar vein, auditing standard number 3 established an experienced reviewer standard to explain how documentation should be judged. Commenters should tell us whether it would be helpful to reiterate or otherwise reference these concepts in this proposal. While I emphasize these points, I don't want to leave the impression that I have any reservations about this proposal. I think it's a very good proposal, and I am pleased to be able to release it for public comment today. I think, as we mentioned earlier, it's been quite a long voyage, but I think that the thoughtfulness that's gone into preparing this is reflected in the proposal. And I'd also like to appreciate my thanks to the staff, numerous staff that's worked on it, in particular, Greg and Tom. So, thank you.
Thank you, Charlie.
Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, first off, I want to say how much I appreciate the excellent work that's been done by all concerned. I think this is a great improvement over the current situation. Among other things, it will close the SEC practice section loophole, which for 5 years, even up to today, permits firms that weren't members of that group to continue to be registered firms and to audit public companies without even having any form of review. I won't get into why it took so long, but, you know, I think that it is a useful thing to recognize that not all firms have been alike in terms of what we expect of them. My thinking has been affected a lot, as I gather my colleagues has as well, by the inspection reports. Far too often, regrettably, concerns have been expressed, properly so, by our inspection force about apparent deficiencies in the quality of the reviews that have taken place. And I think what particularly has struck me about this have been instances in which the firm itself has identified the client as being higher than average risk, but there's been very little evidence, if any, that the engagement reviewer has structured that work to take into account that heightened concern about risk, which, as I said, was identified by the firm itself. I guess the question that's been in my mind pretty much along the line here is, you know, what can we reasonably expect? Is it going to be possible to achieve significant improvements? And I'm satisfied that the answer to that is yes. And there are a number of reasons I say that. One that I particularly want to mention, because it hasn't been mentioned before, except very tangentially, has to do with academic research. As the board knows, a series of synthesis papers has been prepared by volunteer teams put together by the auditing section of the American Accounting Association to review actual practices and to review studies that have been done in a number, 8 or 9 areas of importance to the board and to the profession. One of them has to do with these engagement quality reviews. And they have clearly identified, under current standards, instances, a number of instances and approaches which are better than others in terms of achieving those objectives. In that connection, let me also repeat the name of Gary Fullstrom, who oversaw that project as well as taking the initial lead in this. And I think that is merely the latest evidence of the benefit that can come from the board working more closely over time with the profession. So I'm satisfied that that improvements can be made, that this proposal will be a positive step in that direction, and I look forward to comments which we may receive during the 75-day period.
Thank you, Bill. No further discussion. I'll put the question to the board. All those in favor of approving the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The motion is carried. There's no further business. This concludes our agenda today. The meeting is now adjourned. It is 10:25. We will rise as the open meeting and reconvene at 10:35 for our closed board meeting. Thank you very much.